After seizing control of Afghanistan, the Taliban tells government officials today it's time to get back to work. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 2 days after storming into Afghanistan's capital of Kabul, the militant group now leading the country has announced a, quote, general amnesty for government officials, and it's urging them to return to work without fear as military evacuation flights resume at Kabul airport, carrying diplomats and civilians out of the country. Britain's foreign secretary has proposed setting up a contact group to work with China, Russia, and Pakistan on international efforts focused not just on counterterrorism, but humanitarian relief and economic stability. China is one of Afghanistan's biggest international investors, and yesterday officials said they're willing to develop friendly relations with the Taliban. Raffaella Pantucci is a senior fellow at UK defense and security think tank, the Royal United Services Institute. He told me more about China's economic relationship with Afghanistan.
If we look on paper, the kind of two biggest investment projects that have gone into Afghanistan are Chinese, a copper mine in Messinak and then an oil concession up in the north. However, on paper, these projects are ginormous and are huge investments. In terms of actual money that's gone into Afghanistan and gone into these projects is far more limited because both of these projects haven't proceeded to the full extent that they're initially intended to.
And I guess to continue investing in the country, China would need reassurance of more stability in Afghanistan. So if it gets that, could it potentially pave the way for China to include it in its Belt and Road initiative?
I mean, I think we talk about the Belt and Road as though it's a sort of project. I mean, basically, this is the articulation of foreign policy under Xi Jinping, which is about, you know, building infrastructure, support and investment and making prosperity together. But in literal terms, in terms of, you know, the idea that we often think about it in terms of infrastructure construction and Chinese companies coming in using Chinese banked loans to ultimately develop infrastructure in the country, we haven't seen any of that yet in Afghanistan. We might see it going forwards, but I wouldn't necessarily entirely hold your breath because Afghanistan needs an awful lot of this infrastructure and needs an awful lot of investment going forwards. And for these projects to really work, you need to have a stable government and counterparties who can actually help deliver them. And I think at the moment, we haven't seen that in Afghanistan. And I'm not sure that a Taliban government will be able to deliver it.
So is the statement from China that says that it's willing to develop friendly relations with the Taliban then, is that potentially the first step just to kind of test the waters, I guess, and say we'd be willing to invest further in the country, but we need more stability first?
But I mean, the Chinese have been saying that for years. They were saying it when the Afghan government was in power already. And yet we haven't actually seen a huge amount progress in that direction. I'm uncertain as to why that would suddenly change now. I think that the Chinese would certainly invest in Afghanistan and would certainly like to exploit the mineral opportunities if it was going to be workable and doable. And I'm not sure that they necessarily see that anywhere on the horizon. You know, Chinese rhetoric and Chinese action aren't always the same things.
When we're talking about the Belt and Road and investment in those various infrastructure projects, it's not just China's future in Afghanistan that's potentially at risk with the escalating violence, is it? It's also a host of other projects in neighboring countries that could also potentially be affected, isn't it?
Yes, if instability in Afghanistan gets so bad, it would have presumably potentially a knock-on effect in Central Asia and Pakistan, where China has got lots of projects. But I think you have to remember why these matter to China. They matter to China because investments and projects in Central Asia and South Asia, Pakistan in particular, are really about trying to improve stability and prosperity in this entire region. And China's ultimate goal with improving prosperity and stability in this region is to help Xinjiang become more prosperous and developed. And Xinjiang is the, you know, region of China that sort of abuts this region, which is a region that China's been very concerned about, which is where they have this Uyghur minority that they're very worried about sort of fomenting trouble and instability against the government. And, you know, from their perspective, this region needs to be rich, prosperous, and stable. And for it to be rich, prosperous, and stable, it needs to be in a rich and prosperous and stable neighborhood. And so that's why they're worried about this. I don't think they're as worried that, you know, some specific project in Pakistan will get badly impacted. The point is, if this entire region becomes unstable and problematic, yes, there are various Chinese projects which will lose money and Chinese engineers which will get into trouble. The bigger point is that this then means that Xinjiang will be sitting in an unstable neighborhood. And that is a very bad outcome.
Raffaella Pantucci, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, global benchmarks are drifting lower today, but here in London, mining giant BHP saw its shares jump as much as 10%. That's after reporting its best yearly profit in about a decade, thanks to rising demand and record high prices for iron ore. Meanwhile, China continued its regulatory crackdown today. Authorities took the wraps off new draft rules on internet companies restricting unfair competition and use of user data. To Haiti now, where a powerful storm has made landfall, sparking widespread flooding just days after an earthquake there killed at least 1,400 people. More than 30,000 families have been reportedly left homeless in the Caribbean nation, where 59% of the 11 million-strong population live below the poverty line. The BBC's James Clayton sent us this report from the epicenter of the quake, about 100 miles west of the capital, Port-au-Prince.
It's hard enough to treat survivors of any natural disaster, but when the hospitals themselves are under fear of collapse, it makes it all the more difficult. We're in the hospital now. They've moved all of the beds outside into the sweltering heat. They're trying to put all of the beds under tents or under trees, but they've run out of those, and some people are sitting in the hot sun just waiting for medical attention. A lot of people have come here and have very serious injuries, and it really is a scene of despair for many. The doctors tell me that they've run out of antibiotics, they've run out of painkillers, and it's really clear when you come to a hospital like this just how remote this area is.
One woman, Elsie, had only just woken up when the earthquake happened. One side of my house collapsed, Elsie tells me. The bricks fell in on me and injured my shoulder. Another woman we spoke to, who has a very bad broken leg and is also pregnant, has had no pain relief for 2 days.
Here you go. I got your head. I got your head.
Overall, it's dire. You know, we're sitting here with three hospitals that are moving patients to the airport for transportation out. There's no coordination.
Brian Johnson, a paramedic, says the situation is dire.
Most of the hospitals here are in need of the basics, IV solutions, bandages, medications, including antibiotics and pain management medications. They're in the same situation where they've run out.
The people here need help, but at the moment, not enough help is coming. And to add insult to injury, it's begun to rain. People forced out of their homes who are now on the streets, being left wet and cold.
That's the BBC's James Clayton from reporting from the west of Haiti's capital there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.